Hi, folks. Jack Spirko here. Today you are listening to an episode of TSP Rewind. Commercial-free versions of past episodes. Podcast blasts from the past. I put these up when I can't do a show due to professional commitments or rare vacations. These podcasts will appear in standard iTunes, Stitcher, and other feeds, but will be titled TSP Rewind episodes and numbered accordingly. And today, folks, we are rewinding back all the way to January the 7th, 2014. That is 7 years ago. Back when things were kind of sort of normal around here. We all thought everything was falling apart, but yet I think most of us would trade that time for this time pretty quick right now. But the more things change, the more they remain the same in many instances. And there's a lot of that feeling in today's show. It is called 14 Life Rules for a Modern Survivalist. And when I originally came up with this episode, I was going to call it 14 Rules. But I realized that that would take away the flexibility in my 12th tenet of modern survivalism, which is what you do matters, and you following your plan is more important than you following my plan. Life rules versus rules are a little bit differently, right? Life rules are really ways to think about things, and then you ascertain from them how does that apply to this situation where a straight-up rule is never do this thing or always do this thing. And I've found over the years that people who follow the rules that way tend to really make disasters out of their lives. Or they tend to just be lackluster. Whatever they achieve, they could have done more. People that break the rules, right? People that break the rules achieve and succeed. It's completely counter to everything they teach you in school. Everything. But it's true. It's true. And that doesn't mean people that cheat in the true sense of the world, like screwing other people over, succeed. No, but people that refuse to be confined by a belief system that doesn't actually apply to them tend to do better than people who don't. That kind of makes sense now, doesn't it? And that's why I came at this from a life rule standpoint. People that succeed in life, long term, I guess politicians aside, generally don't screw other people over. They generally have their own sort of moral code. In fact, all people have a moral code. The most reprehensible people in the world have a moral code. You just don't agree with their morals. But most people have a commonality in morality. They know that certain things are wrong. And just as we have moral rules, we have basically life rules. Rules that are maybe grounded in morality, maybe they're in a position where it's not really a moral decision, it's just a common sense logical decision. And when we stick to logic, fact, and reason versus emotion in making decisions, we will tend to do better in life than if we don't. And since survival is part of living, because the minute you fail to survive, you stop living, it applies to survival and preparedness as well. And that's where these 14 rules of life, rather than rules of absolutism, came from. Now, just real quick before I tune you back into the 2014 episode, why we're doing this today. It's a Monday, coming out of a weekend. You would think, why the hell, Jack's not going on vacation or anything. I am about to speak at the Greater Reset Wednesday evening, though, and I am not ready. I'm not prepared, and I want to do a really good job. I'm going to be speaking alongside some really amazing people, and even though I don't speak until Wednesday, the Greater Reset begins this evening, and I'm going to be there as a viewer tonight and tomorrow night. I am going to be part of this more than just showing up, throwing up, and leaving. I hate speakers that get involved in organizations and events, and that's all they do. They show up, throw up, and leave. I refuse to be that guy. I want to know what's going on. I want to have a larger conversation with members that have been part of it, etc. So I'm going to be there. That means that, like, locking myself in my office this evening, which I'm not beyond doing, and working on my presentation after my workday's done, isn't really an option. I kind of let myself get a little bit under the gun on time here, but it's not like I haven't started yet, right? I probably could do a new episode today, and I probably could finish my presentation today and maybe do a run through tomorrow, and I would probably be fine. But being prepared means planning for the worst. So I'm giving myself a little bit of buffer. I hope you guys understand it. In any event, I think you'll enjoy this episode. And I think I could do this episode for the first time today. And you'd be like, wow, that's really poignant. That really applies a lot to what's going on in the world today. That really has a lot to do with, like, the new Biden administration and stuff like that and the pandemic and all. And yet it was done in 2014. It's a very evergreen episode. On that note, I just want to give you one example of one of the rules here. And this has to do with politicians. In fact, it's the first rule I cover today. And it says, ignore politicians. Do not, however, ignore their actions and resulting consequences. That's exactly how I feel about our new president, Biden. But I also think it's important that we understand that not everything we believe is going to affect us really affects us. And what that requires is, even if we don't, look, so I'm out, right? Trump, Biden, whatever. They're both people that are part of an entity we call the state that I do not recognize their authority over my life. I don't play in that sandbox anymore. I'm out. So I still pay attention to the effects of what they do, like I do a storm, but I don't have an emotional attachment to either side. When you have an emotional attachment to either side, it makes it very difficult to see the truth about an action they take or a statement that they make in the current reality. So here's an example of that. Right now, the left is cheering because big old creepy Joe canceled the Keystone XL pipeline. All right? Oh, yay! The seals will now be safe and whatever, and global warming will cease, and his arms reached out and embraced the country while he called half of them racist bigots, but called for unity, and he got rid of the evil Keystone pipeline, which is the whole reason for all of our problems. And now that dirty Canadian oil will not come into the United States, and even if it's not perfect, at least that we can rest our little liberal heads on, and it's so wonderful to have the icky days of Trump behind us. Likewise, the right is out there going, oh my God, it's the end of gas and oil! Ah! And you sound just as dumb as they do. I'm sorry you do. Here's why. It's not like that's the only way to get oil from Canada to the United States, and there are many other pipelines that do the same thing. The Keystone was designed to increase capacity. In this year alone, Canada not only will remain the largest importer of oil to the United States through pipelines, which already exist and many of which are being expanded, just saying, we won't not get one drop of Canadian oil because of this, and not one drop of Canadian oil less will be produced from the tar sands because of this. Right now, there are a multitude of pipelines that are being expanded to handle Canadian oil. A multitude of them. They're all, like, they're not in this, see, the whole point about Keystone was in this legal standstill. Right? It hadn't cleared everything, so the president, without the legislature, used an executive order to approve it, so that meant the next president could easily do the same thing to disapprove it. However, the pipeline people are not stupid, okay? They're not dumb. And they know this, and the Canadian oil interests and the U.S. oil interests and refineries are not stupid, and they know this. So yeah, we'll put that piece of tubing together, because that's all it is a big tube. But we're not going to just do, we're going to expand elsewhere during these 4 years. What do you think they were doing for 4 years? Just working on one pipeline and couldn't finish it? So at this point, even with an additional massive influx of Canadian oil into the United States, we are overpiped. We have more pipeline than we need, and more is coming, even though the deadly, oh my God, Keystone is gone. So oil and gas is not destroyed. Oil and gas is not shut down. In fact, if this actually curtailed Canadian oil at all, it would actually spur on greater U.S. domestic oil production, which it won't, because there's plenty of pipe. It's a tube that runs under the ground, folks, and it's, we have lots of them. And if you doubt me at all, I'm going to give you an article, the only thing added to the show notes today other than all my new social media and stuff like that, that's new, that's not from the original timeline that this was done in 2014, of an article by Reuters, not exactly, you know, right-wing conspiracy theorists or, you know, they may be left-wing liberals, they certainly are, but if anything, you think they would be touting how great Biden is and how this is a good thing if they were leaning left on presentation of this. They actually reported the facts for a change. That's kind of odd for a mainstream media outlet, especially something as large as Reuters, but they did. And this is something I knew, and this is why I didn't care. So when you get to that first rule today, and the following 13, always temper it with, but does it really apply? Because in this case, it really doesn't. But all those people, Jack, are going to lose their jobs. A lot of people will lose their jobs over this. Some of them will go to other projects, which will now tick up. Some of them will have to go find other jobs altogether. But that's what many people said. It's not fair. It's not right. I wouldn't have canceled it. All I'm pointing out is it doesn't do what the left thinks it does. And it doesn't do what the right thinks it does. but it panders to the leftists that played the Biden gambit that he was going to be an extreme leftist. It panders to them. And look for everything that comes out of the next 30 days from Joe Biden to be virtue signaling pandering, to pander to these people, and then look for him to govern as the moderate Democrat, which is still sleaze in my opinion, before you think I'm saying something too nice, the moderate Democrat that the old crazy bastard is. The question is, how much can he be influenced by his surrogates? And the answer is probably a lot. But there's a limit to what a president can do with a pen. I'm hearing all these things. Biden outlawed with an executive. No, that doesn't work that way. Always pay attention to what actions the politicians take that affect you. But make damn sure they actually do. There's your new content for today. And with that, let's rewind all the way back. January 7th, 2014. Kindness for all this work someday. So, Alex, thank you for all of that. All right, with that, let's get into the main topic of today's show. Today's show is called 12 Rules. It's actually 14 rules because I added two more while I was working on the show notes. 14 Rules of a Modern Survivalist. When I conceived of this show, I thought I would call it 14 Rules for Being a Modern Survivalist. And then I realized it's completely inconsistent with the way that I think and with survival tenet number 10, which is everything that you do matters. And if you don't like the way I do things or suggest things, make your own. Do your own thing. Use your own mindset. And above all, understand that your choices matter. And that means I can't dictate to you what you should do. All I can do is tell you what I do and let you glean from it what makes the most sense for yourself. And no matter how passionately I deliver things, when you hear me and you think I'm screaming at you to do things the way I do, understand I'm not. I just emphatically believe in my ideals that much that it can come across that way. What I'm really saying to you is this is what I think. This is how I feel. This is what I believe. This is why I believe it. This is how I've used it in my life. This has been the results of doing that. And because of those results, I'm even more convinced that this is a good way to live. But in the end, I'm totally okay with you saying, I'm not going to do it that way. What I'm not okay with you saying, and I won't say to you, is you're wrong for doing it that way. See, that's where I think we overstep our boundaries, is when we start telling. Now, there are certain universal morality and ethics that are out there. And I'm going to talk about moral code today and how you have an individual moral code. But I think we have a moral code that society as a whole generally understands and gets, except for some people that probably need a hole in the ground to solve their problems, such as you don't go out and beat children with a baseball bat. That's not acceptable behavior. So I have no problem telling a person that thinks it's okay to beat children with a baseball bat or that sick asshole who has that book on behavior modification that advises getting fuel lines, holding your children down and beating them across the legs until they submit to you. I have no problem telling that son of a bitch he's wrong. But when it comes to life-based decisions, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong because you believe something different than me. If you're not harming anybody else in your beliefs, if you're not violating anybody else's freedom and liberty, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. And in some instances, even in that case, because you're conforming to what is the reality of society today, I'm going to tell you that you're wrong. In other words, I believe in less government, and many people out there seem to think the solution is more government, and in utilizing the apparatus of government to enforce what you think should be on other people, you are indeed infringing upon liberties, and I will debate your ideology with you, but I won't tell you you as a human being are wrong, because I know that most people that are doing that truly are doing what they think is right. And it takes time to evolve out of that state where you think, hey, we could just fix this with a law. We could just fix this with the right politician. So in general, I'm not ever going to tell anybody how to think. I'm just going to tell you how I think and make the case for how I think. And a little bit there on politics goes right into the first rule. Because I've gotten a lot of emails from people lately that seem to think that I have decided that there's no point at all to even worrying about politics, yet I talk about politics, and they don't understand how the two jive with each other. Well, here's the rule that I'm living by. ignore politicians. Ignore politicians. Ignore, you know, in the last presidential election, I ignored Mitt Romney. I ignored Barack Obama. They're both two sides of the same coin. I don't care. But the rest of the rule is, do not, however, ignore their actions and resulting consequences. So you do have to pay attention to what government's doing and the consequences of their actions. And there are places to fight, but you don't fight one politician against another. You don't do the bidding, okay, of one side of the mafia family. You know? You don't pick the Corleones, you know, and back the Corleones over their opponents. That's not how you live in a free republic. What you fight is the intent. Whenever the intent is wrong, you do whatever you can that will work to fight it, and when it's not going to happen, when they're going to do it anyway, then you focus on not fighting it, but what's going to happen. So how do I deal with it? How do I prepare myself for it? Because they're going to do this even though I don't want them to. I know that in this one I've been beaten before I've even tried. An example was Obamacare. We were never, ever, ever, ever going to stop Obamacare from happening. Ever. I came on the microphone before the bill existed and told you they were going to do it, it was going to happen, and it was going to be so bad that it would ruin our current healthcare system, which was already bad and did need to be fixed, but it would totally demolish it to the point where within 5 to 7 years after it was implemented, the public would turn around and beg the government for government-provided healthcare. You can see the beginnings of that right now. You can see, you know, my wife having her insurance go up because they now have to provide her with maternity coverage. We're not going to have any kids, folks. We're past that stage in our lives. We don't want it. We have to have it. My insurance went up. I don't even know why. I've never used it, but my insurance went up about 30%. And mainly it's because I have to now have coverage that I have never wanted, I've never paid for, and I don't want. And I was not without coverage. I was not going to be the guy that was running up a big bill on society that you had to pay for in the emergency rooms and through tax dollars. I had plenty of coverage for catastrophics. They required my insurance company to provide me a lower deductible even though I don't want one. That's just one of the reasons my insurance went up. And it went up at a level that I can absorb, but I'm telling you, many people in my position can't. Or if this had happened to me several years ago before I had built the show to where it is today, I would have said, screw it, I don't want it at all anymore then. I would have dropped it and paid the penalty. Because the penalty would have I've been able to afford, and the cost here I wouldn't. And how many Americans is this going to happen to? And the answer is a lot. And the fine's little the first year, and it goes up every year. It's designed to force you to buy something you don't want. So that's a consequence. So in that instance, you had to know that was going to happen. You had to accept that that was going to happen. You can call your congressman all you want. Everybody was already on the board with what they were going to do. Olympia Snow was the snow job that was going to push it over and make it happen, and nothing was going to change her mind. And she gave cover to all her fellow rhinos to be able to go and vote against it, even though they were for it, because they knew they had the votes. She was the safest person to do that. Now, if you think I'm making a case for good quality Republicans, they would have done something equally stupid. That's the point. This was the point in time that this was going to get done by the one side of the mafia family. The mafia family in control before that, right? The Republican mafia put in place all these security measures and apparatuses being used to spy on by the American people. That was also going to happen. And when it was put in place by one party, you knew when the other family took over, they were going to use it even more. And you know that whoever takes over next... So the reality of NSA spying is an action of the political system, and it has consequences. You're not going to stop it. Not yet. Not unless enough people are mad enough to do something about it, and they're not yet. So you can't really spend your time worrying about politician A or B. Or maybe I should say politician D or R. You really can't, because with very, very few exceptions, and the exceptions are so minor that they don't really impact the decision of the entire body of government, They're the same people. And when it comes to your federal Congress, most districts are going to send a D or an R, right? They're going to say, this district is always going to send you a D. They might change the D, but you're going to get a D. And this district, there's very few swing divisions, especially in the Senate. In the House, you see it swap back and forth quite a bit. But what do you notice when it swaps back and forth? What changes? Nothing. Government grows, tyranny grows, freedom declines. Debt grows, right? Fiscal irresponsibility grows. Focusing on the politician is a waste of your time. Focus only on the consequences to you, the actions, and fight the idea. Don't line up with the individual. If something's coming through government and we legitimately can scare the criminals into backing off, do it. If it can't be done, figure out what to do about it before it happens. That's how I live my life. That's why you hear me talk about politics and say politics doesn't matter at the same time. That's the thought process. That's the only thing political that you're going to hear today. And I actually consider that quite anti-political, by the way. The next thing that I've always tried to convey to you guys over the years, 5 years, 5.5 years now, almost six, is truly understand things in this order. Absolute needs, comfort items, and luxuries in your planning. And what I mean by absolute needs is shelter is an absolute need. One way or another, no matter where you live in the world, at some point your life is in danger if you don't have some sort of a shelter. Either from heat or cold or wet, something can actually threaten your life to the point of death or disease that will cause death if you don't have shelter. So shelter is an absolute need. A house is not an absolute need. An apartment is not an absolute need. I consider them a need minus the absolute. That's where the bifurcation there is between absolute need and need. You need shelter to the absolute. You don't necessarily have to have a house to have shelter. The houses are actually a relatively new invention of human beings. You could live in a cave, you could live in a hut, you could build a lean-to, you could live in a tent. There are many forms of shelter other than housing. But the reality is to function in our modern society, to prosper, you need a house or you need housing. It is a need, but not an absolute need. You might think that that little thing in between the two isn't that important, but it is. That little nuance is extremely important because I need a house, and I have to plan to have a house, and I have to do everything I can to keep a home to stay in. But my house could be blown up, and I can survive, but I will still have the absolute need of shelter. Does that make sense? I need money, but I have an absolute need for money. So the absolute needs get the bulk of my mental preparation and my physical preparation, followed by the needs, and then the comfort items, because I need food. I have an absolute need for food, right? And then I have a need for quality, healthy food, and then food that I like that's also quality and healthy is a comfort item. So I have to think in order of preparations to go without systems of support and possibly need food, that my first goal in food preparation is to meet the absolute need. Calories and nutrients that will keep me alive because they're cheap. Many things I do not eat on a daily basis store really well, like grains. And they will meet the absolute need. From there, I need to move to the nutrition for my body type and for my lifestyle as a need. Pasture-raised eggs, which also can help fulfill my absolute need, but my chickens could be stolen, my chickens could be killed by hawks, my chickens could be killed by foxes, my chickens don't lay certain times of the year. I can only eat so many of the chickens before I have no more chickens. So they move more into the need versus absolute need. And I don't really need a chicken. They're actually more of a comfort item. But they provide a need, high-quality nutrition. You start to think that way with every element in your life. You start to make really smart decisions because you don't need at any level, an Xbox. That's probably a bad example for me because I tell you I don't get the point. I don't play games. I don't care. So, for instance, we have a big screen TV. I do not need a big screen TV. I cannot make the case that I need a big screen TV. I can't even make the case that the big screen TV is really a comfort item. It is a luxury. It uses energy that could be used for other things. It's bigger than I need. I'm a little bit nearsighted, but I'm not that bad. I can see smaller screens. I could watch all the things that I want for my comfort, my videos and TV and stuff like that on a computer. I could get all the information that I feel that I need, like when a disaster's going on, from a tiny screen. I don't need a big screen TV. It's not even a comfort item. To me, it's a luxury. A comfort item is that we have nice soft carpet in our home. It's not a luxury, it's a comfort item. It's somewhere in that place in between. Well, I would really be unhappy if my floor was just like concrete. I would really not be comfortable in my climate and in my lifestyle with a crappy floor. It's a comfort item. It's not quite a luxury. And the difference between comfort items and luxury is nowhere near as important as the difference between needs and comfort items and the difference between absolute needs and needs. That's the end of the spectrum to focus on. Shore all of those up, and you can get through anything. The next thing is, and this is where I differ with a lot of people that you would call wilderness survivalists, tough survivalists, I'm fighting the government survivalists, that think all primitive, right? I'm not going to use any modern technologies because they'll fail eventually. I say use anything that works, as long as it is ethical and it actually works. That's the key. Is it ethical and does it actually work? In other words, if I want money, coming over to your house, shooting you in the face, and taking your money works. And if I'm good at it and I get away with it, it works pretty well. I can do it to a lot of people and get a lot of money, and as long as I don't get caught, it works. But it's not ethical. Right? It's an extreme example, but it's to make a point. Just because it works doesn't mean it's ethical. So to me, I have a code of ethics I won't violate, which is another principle we'll get to in a bit. And as long as it doesn't violate my ethics and it works, I'll do it. The rest of it, though, use anything that works as long as it is ethical and actually works. So how does that work? We can look into permaculture to see this. So if I have a field and I dump NPK fertilizer, chemical petroleum-based fertilizer, on that field, does it work?